What could be as pure as mom, apple pie, and nonpartisan redistricting? Go to our politics website. It's freecountry.org, where we have a full-color map right on the homepage, and a couple of maps, actually, and see for yourself all the funny-shaped congressional and legislative districts. We have a map for Congress, a map for state Senate and assembly. Look at all the funny-shaped districts, including the one they call the Claw in Nassau County. This happens because whichever party controls the houses of the state legislature basically gets to draw the lines. Democratic State Senate Leader Malcolm Smith made that perfectly clear in a speech to party loyalists earlier this year. He said if the Democrats win the Senate, he would redistrict the Republicans into oblivion. He later tried to take it back.
Well, the mayor is always known for his colorful words. And I guess some of my words were colorful, too, when I talked about oblivion. But I was really referencing the June 29th article in The Times from Sam Roberts, where he basically said demographics will prove that Senate Democrats will pick up 4 or 5 seats just on the basic lines. So I told the mayor we could be fair if we had to. You know, he explained to me the way the redistricting commission would function, which they really, they're appointed by the members in our conference. They get 3 shots at changing the lines if we disagree, and then on the third time it actually would be what we want. So I told him that I'm open to it, but still I believe that Democrats could be fair.
So that backtracking makes it clear he doesn't think people want one party redistricting the other party into oblivion just because they can. So what could be as pure as mom, apple pie, and nonpartisan redistricting? One of the big rallying cries in the New York state elections this year is for candidates to sign an actual pledge for nonpartisan redistricting when the new lines are drawn for the new decade next year. That happens the year after the census is taken every decade. Former Mayor Ed Koch has been leading that charge. Both gubernatorial candidates and most state legislature candidates have now signed on to Koch's pledge. But let's take a closer look at the fine print. For example, Senator Chuck Schumer says if New York does neutral districting, while most other states don't, we will unilaterally hand control of Congress to the Republican Party. We'll explain. Blacks and Latinos are also concerned that their voting power could be unfairly diminished. The Voting Rights Act actually requires a certain amount of race-conscious districting because so-called neutral districting would leave non-white voters severely underrepresented. So let's get 3 views. It's our election series, 30 issues in 30 days. It's issue 12 today, true or false, rational redistricting is impossible. Up first, New York State Assemblyman Michael Benjamin from the Bronx, not running for re-election this year, and a skeptic about the neutral redistricting movement. Assemblyman, welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. Pleasure.
Do you think this is being made out to sound simpler and more pure a question than it really is?
Yes, I believe so. And I believe at heart there is a major distrust of democracy, a distrust of the voters, a distrust of what I think years and decades ago the good government groups would have called the rabble, whether they were the Irish immigrants or other immigrants who came to our shores and began to organize politically and began to take control of the reins of government.
Where does the Voting Rights Act come in? One of the bedrock civil rights laws that dates back to the 1960s.
Is to increase representation and protect the voting rights of African Americans and other minorities, as it's been amended over the last couple decades, and it's enabled the election of minorities, African Americans in particular, at the local, state, and federal level, and we've seen representation go up over the years.
And where does redistricting intersect with that?
Well, as communities change and you have more African Americans in a particular neighborhood or area or parts of our city or parts of our state, enough sufficient numbers to require at least to try to get representation to elect one of their own to office, represent the community's interests. And that has happened in New York over the last 50 years. And I think it's worked out to the benefit of the minority, the black and African American minority community and others and our entire city to have better representation of the diversity of New York State in our legislature, in Congress, and being able to give those communities a voice in how policies are produced.
And lines are now drawn for, African Americans, Caribbean blacks, Latinos, Asians, even a gay seat or two. You gave the New York Observer.
Well, that's not covered by the Voting Rights Act. That was a decision made by the.
That's a political decision. Those are political. Yeah. Some of those are political decisions.
Yes, absolutely.
Is it only the African Americans, or also African Americans and Latinos, who are covered by the Voting Rights Act?
Asians and other racial and language minorities, and when they reach a certain threshold, and as they agitate for election, you know, for years the Chinese American community in Lower Manhattan have been agitating for a council district, and yet they were unable to elect one until Ms. Chin a year ago.
Last year, you gave the New York Observer some examples recently from your own area in the Bronx. For example, Concourse Village, a predominantly black Mitchell-Lama housing development, which has been districted in and out of different districts at different times. Tell us some of the Concourse Village story.
Well, it's a predominantly African-American Mitchell-Lama in the Bronx.
You want to say where exactly, just so people know?
158th Street, Morris Avenue, Sheridan Avenue.
Okay.
To its north, and I believe 156th Street, 158th and 156th Street.
Right.
Not too far from Yankee Stadium.
Right. And?
And over the years, they've been redistricted into Congressman Serrano's district, out of it into Elliott Engel's district, and when Elliott Engel's district was reconfigured in 2002, it was put back into Congressman Serrano's district. Part of the issue has been, you know, African Americans in the Bronx have yet to see the election of an African American to Congress. And there have been a number of efforts over the last two decades to try to have that happen. It hasn't happened quite yet. The Elliott Engel district is most interesting because that's a majority-minority district, but it spans three different counties, Bronx, Westchester, and Rockland County. And none of the minorities that are in that congressional district have anything really in common because they're from three different counties, three different socioeconomic groups, and they have different kinds of, you know, political rivalries and different kinds of economic conditions. And one has not risen to challenge Congressman Engel to represent that district.
But let's talk about that for a minute. You filed a lawsuit against that congressional district that Engel represents, this majority-minority city-suburban district that runs through parts of the Bronx, Westchester, and Rockland. But what's so bad about that? Neutral redistricting advocates say more of those hybrid districts would be good for America to break our extreme polarization. If there are more districts that are politically mixed with people with different kinds of interests, as you were just describing, then politicians will need to form coalitions and compromise rather than digging into polarized narrow camps as we do now when everyone in a district has the same political interests. Is there not some good in that kind of mixed district?
But Brian, the polarization has not been along racial and ethnic lines. It's been along political, the Democratic Republican fault line.
Mm-hmm.
The Engel district will always be a predominantly, you know, Democratic district. It will not elect a Republican, you know, in that way. The issue has been it was created as a majority minority district.
well, even that, I'll give you a minute to clear your throat. So here you have a white Jewish politician who must feel a certain imperative when he's in Congress to represent the interests of, you know, the blacks and Latinos in his district, because there are so many of them. He's going to need a lot of their votes to stay in.
So he does.
So there's a certain, you know, rather than dividing up in such a way where white politicians only represent white people, and so there becomes this sort of white block and a black block and a Latino block. Is that what we're heading for? Is that the only way to have democracy?
No, I mean, there are a number of districts across the United States that's majority white, and they have elected an African American representative or a Latino. So it's not necessarily always going to be the case. It's about creating districts where communities have something in common, as the courts have ruled over the last 2.5 decades. That district is prevented from doing that because it runs across three different counties. So you have three different sets of minorities. You have Haitian Americans in the Rockland County portion of that district. You have Caribbean Americans in the Westchester portion, and you have African Americans and Caribbeans in the Bronx portion. And they don't have the opportunity to elect one of their own. What allows them, Mr. Engel, to continue to be reelected, despite what some members of the committee would like to see happen, is that there is in a primary a solid block of white votes that accrue to him, and makes it almost virtually impossible for a single minority candidate to effectively run and be competitive. If the issue is to have competitive races, competitive districts. District is certainly not competitive in that fashion.
So last thing before you go, and then we're going to get another view on this. If the Koch campaign works and people make this pledge and actually make an attempt at nonpartisan redistricting in the state legislature next year, what do you think the effect will be on New York, positive or negative?
Negative, because to me, it's another version of term limits. It will subject our state to a possibility of dramatic swings in party control. You will not wind up with a 50-50 split, Democrat Republican, whether you throw in working families or conservative party. We could possibly have dramatic changes every 10 years of one party control to another party's control, and that would not inure to the good of the state of New York and its residents. Again, I still believe that some of the good government groups don't trust democracy. They don't trust the legislature. The legislature is elected by the people. A nonpartisan independent commission would not be elected by the people. So they would have no ties to the community. They would not know what districts look like, what communities may have in common. You can't draw rectangular or square boxes to create districts. My assembly district is basically a rectangle. Yes, there are districts that look odd, but that's going to happen no matter what you do. We don't have perfectly square counties and boroughs. So you're going to have districts that will look peculiar.
Well, we'll talk next to a leader of one of those good government groups, and we thank Democratic Assemblyman, outgoing Democratic Assemblyman, as he's not running for re-election, Michael Benjamin from the Bronx. Thank you very much.
Brian, thanks for having me.
Now, I don't want to go into their hearts or their heads to say that they're doing it for good reasons or for bad reasons. What I'm interested in is getting reapportionment done for the state, which applies to the Congress, which applies to the state legislature.
Ed Koch on Capitol Tonight, fighting for nonpartisan redistricting. It's 30 issues in 30 days. Our election series, issue 12, true or false, rational redistricting is impossible. Go to our politics website, itsafreecountry.org, where we have some full-color maps right on the homepage, and see for yourself all the funny-shaped congressional and legislative districts, including the one that looks like Idaho in central New York and the one they call the Claw in Nassau County. With us now is Dick Dady, executive director of the good government group, the Citizens Union, which supports nonpartisan redistricting. Hi, Dick. Welcome back to WNYC.
Nice to see you, Brian.
You've been listening to Michael Benjamin.
Yes.
You share some of the concerns about racial equity, for example?
Most definitely. And he presented a false choice that somehow you can't have nonpartisan elections without somehow disenfranchising communities of color. And that's not true. I mean, this nonpartisan redistricting commission would be bound by the same rules that the legislature has been bound by to ensure fair and adequate representation of minorities in this political process.
Because it's the law of the land. It's in the Voting Rights
Act. Exactly. And it's reinforced in the piece of legislation that actually exists in Albany and actually goes beyond the requirement in the state legislation proposed goes beyond the Voting Rights Act, so it's even stronger. So it's a false choice that's being presented.
I read that Senator Schumer says if New York goes down this road, New York State could unilaterally and artificially hand power over to the Republicans in Congress. And his argument is that since most states practice partisan redistricting, if the very blue state of New York suddenly does nonpartisan redistricting, it's really unilateral disarmament by the Democrats. It could flip, he says, four House seats in the state from Democrat to Republican, and that could actually mean control of Congress. Does he have a point?
No, he doesn't. He actually is a lot smarter than those words indicate. He is playing to a partisan base when he makes those comments. You know, just to go back, I mean, Elliot Engel's district is drawn, as Mike Benjamin talked about, because Elliot Engel is allowed into the room and is allowed to draw his district lines, which is unfair. This whole thing about nonpartisan redistricting is about taking the power away from those who stand to personally benefit, politically benefit, and trust it into an independent commission.
So how does it work now exactly?
Well, right now is that the Senate and the Assembly choose legislators from each of their conferences to work together to draw the lines. And in the past, you know, the Assembly's been given free rein to draw their lines, and the Senate vice versa. And that's why we've had, you know, controlled by the Assembly Democrats and controlled by the Senate Republicans until recently, because they've had this non-aggression pact toward each other.
So since the state assembly is overwhelmingly Democratic, they get to draw lines that protect their own districts overwhelmingly. The state Senate until recently had been solidly Republican, so they got to draw an incumbent protection plan for themselves. Now the state Senate is almost evenly divided, so that may be more of a give-and-take situation. How do the congressional lines get drawn?
The congressional lines are also drawn by the state legislature in the same manner that the state legislative district lines are drawn.
And how would you like to see it done?
We would like to see the congressional lines also drawn by this independent redistricting commission. It's not as if legislators and Congress members would not have a role or a say in how these lines are drawn, because the way the legislation is designed is that this commission actually acts as an advisory commission, as an advisory capacity. The legislature ultimately has to sign off on the lines that are drawn. That's guaranteed in the Constitution. So this commission essentially makes the first pass, presents it to the legislature. The legislature votes it up and down, similar to the way in which the Military Base Closing Commission operates on the national level.
And what's the goal? Is it if you have X percentage of New Yorkers who voted Democrat and X percentage of New Yorkers who voted Republican in the last election, that that's the percentage of representatives that you want to have going to Congress from New York?
No, it's to take a blind eye to the way in which these lines are drawn, to really draw them in ways that keep communities together, to ensure minority representation. You know, just to go back to what Mike Benjamin was saying, you know, gerrymandering has been used to disempower communities of color. We only need to look at northern Manhattan when the Dominican community was divided in half in the early 1990s. And the Justice Department came in and said no to the state legislature. And the state legislature was doing it to protect a white incumbent and disempower a seat that eventually was run by won by a Dominican Assemblyman Adriana Espaillat.
But can you, in effect, draw a square box around every X square miles in the state and call that a district? I mean, the Voting Rights Act itself would prohibit that.
Yes, it would. I mean, that's why some of the districts look a little bizarre, because of they're drawn to comply with the Voting Rights Act. And this would not change that at all. In fact, we would be very disturbed if, in fact, if a commission tried to disempower. It just can't. You know, so it's a red herring for people to put that out there.
John from Manhattan writes on our website, it's freecountry.org, computer programs could easily perform a fair and impartial redistricting, probably result in, heavens know, a more centrist district and marginalize the wackiness of the month, in this case, the teabaggers.
Well, here's the problem that we have, and average citizens in New York understand this, that part of the dysfunction and the corruption that goes on in Albany is because, as you mentioned earlier, they have to play to their narrow partisan bases in these districts. You know, only 5% of the – or 5% of the districts, both in the Assembly and the Senate, had incumbents win re-election over the last decade within 10 percentage points. Most of them are run unopposed because of the way district lines are drawn, and most of them win by 10 or 20%. And what does that happen? It means people – what results in that? People then play to their partisan bases.
Also joining us briefly now is Brenda Wright, director of the Democracy Program at the liberal think tank Demos. She's going to talk to us about one aspect of redistricting that is changing in New York and probably for the better in democracy terms. Brenda, thank you so much for coming on. Hello.
Hi, great to be on.
And this has to do with where prisoners are counted as living for the purposes of apportionment, correct?
Correct.
And what has been the case in New York, and is it changing?
Well, there's new legislation that was enacted this past session, and what it does is to correct a longstanding inequity in the way that incarcerated people are treated for purposes of redistricting. The census, when the census counts people in prison, they count them as residents of the prison community instead of as residents of the community, the home community that they come from and that they'll be returning to on average within about 34 months. And it turns out that this goes against the New York State Constitution, which says that incarceration does not change your residence for legal purposes. It goes against the way that New York law treats incarcerated people's residence for virtually all other legal purposes. And so, and the effect of it is to sort of pad out the population of the largely upstate districts where prisons are located in New York. detracts from the political representation of the home communities where incarcerated people come from.
Because most people who are inmates in state prisons come from New York City, actually, and most of the prisons themselves are located what New York City residents would call up in the boonies. So that's now going to change for sure?
That's going to change because of the legislation that was enacted that says that for this upcoming redistricting, they're going to look at the home addresses of incarcerated people and essentially reassign the population to those home districts. And really, I mean, it's been portrayed sometimes as an upstate versus downstate issue. The truth is that counting incarcerated people as residents of the prison community really hurts just about everybody in the state who doesn't live next to a prison. And in particular, you know, you see this in the upstate local redistricting, where there are 13 counties in New York State that are already removing incarcerated people from their population counts for purposes of local redistricting, because you can get enormous distortions for county districts or city council districts if you're counting a huge prison as if it were actual population.
How many total people are we talking about in New York State?
Currently, I think the figures are about 60,000 people are incarcerated. And, you know, the majority of those do come from the downstate areas.
Brenda Wright, director of the Democracy Program at DEMOS, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And Dick Dady, is this something that the Citizens Union also backs?
We strongly supported it. It's a long overdue correction to this policy. And what was interesting about this is that Republican Senate districts upstate are made much smaller than those downstate Democratic districts. And so the effect of counting prisoners in upstate Senate districts over-exaggerated the power of the state Senate districts upstate, because there were people being counted in those districts that were not voting.
So bottom line, as we got to go in a minute, if this neutral districting or nonpartisan district movement comes to fruition and it is done in Albany through a commission as opposed to through the normal political channels, let's say all the same people are elected to the state legislature as are there now, or that the partisan balance doesn't change at all. What would actually change as a result of nonpartisan redistricting? How different would our congressional delegation turn out to be? How different would the partisan balance in the state legislature turn out to be?
I would hope that we would see a much more civil political discourse, because people would have to speak to a broader range of constituents within their districts, knowing that they would have to compete in more competitive elections.
That's a good hope at a conceptual level, but what do you think the practical outcome numerically would be?
I think that given the political demographic makeup of the state, we would see more competitive races, but also pretty much the way it is right now in terms of representation and control by the political parties. I don't think we'd see that much of a shift. You'd see more individuals elected who are willing to find some common ground with people in their district.
All right. Dick Dady, Executive Director of the Citizens Union, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
And our new politics website, itsafreecountry.org, wants you to send in your favorite gerrymandered district, whether it's your home district, the district you visited, or just one you tracked down. Nominate an oddly shaped district, and we'll pick our favorite later today. Find a link to district maps at itsafreecountry.org, or join in on Twitter at @freecountry. And we do have maps up there right now. See the full color maps of the sometimes oddly shaped district in New York State at itsafreecountry.org. Brian Lehrer and WNYC. And coming up next, we will have a call-in for you grown-ups who began life as test tube babies. Stay tuned.